Hi, welcome to another episode of Django Chat, a fortnightly podcast on the Django web framework. I'm Carlton Gibson, joined as ever by Will Vincent. Hello, Will.
Hi, Carlton.
Hello, Will. And today we've got with us David Smith, who's maintainer of Crispy Forms, contributor to Django and all sorts of other packages in the ecosystem. Hello, David.
Hi, Carlton. Hi, Will.
Hello. Thanks for coming on. So I really wanted to get you on because you sort of, for me, you've kind of appeared over the last year or so and been and dived into the contributing world. And I wanted, you know, for you to tell that story because, you know, come and contribute to Django. Like that's the thing, right? But let's get into that. But let's start. How did you get into Django? How did this, we always ask, what's your backstory? And then we can get onto how you got into contributing.
Yeah. So I think straight away, my backstory is probably a little different to most people that you have on the podcast. By profession, I'm an accountant. I do strategic planning. So nothing to do with coding as part of my day job. A little bit of VBA here and there, but if I can get away from VBA, then yeah, there's got to be a better way, right?
Right. So are you into this whole Python for financing? Because you can load Excel spreadsheets into Python, and you know, there's books on this.
Absolutely. I think that's where the industry is going, and it'll become a bigger part of an accountant's kind of toolkit to have some Python knowledge, especially, you know, looking ahead, we're starting to hear Microsoft maybe putting Python into Excel.
They've got, what's this thing, that this Lambda thing they're doing?
I've not used that. I think that's within Excel itself, and you can write small functions that call itself. But that's not so helpful for writing, scripting. A lot of what we do is quite basic, really. It's, you know, here's some data, I need it in this format, or I need to look at it like this. And VBA is the tool that we've got today. But like I say, there's got to be a better way than go-tos.
Well, it reminds me of, I have a MBA, and in the MBA, Python is now a core class in most curriculums, and certainly in the marketing courses. Like I remember taking them 10 years ago, but it's all, you know, ooh, macros in Excel when everything can be done in Python. And so it is interesting how it does seem to be programming by extension. Python is a necessary toolkit, even if it's just scripts across the business world.
Absolutely. And I think there's an evolution of data teams becoming part of that kind of corporate ecosystem. And I think accountants have got a weird fit of a lot of what we do is data and analysis and looking at the future, and therefore you need to look at the data on one hand to, you know, what does it mean? What can I inform the business? And all part of that story that you're trying to tell and where it fits within an organization across IT, data, finance, business units. And I think the industries are still trying to figure out how that all kind of joins together. And on one hand, you've got data in, you know, enterprise databases that maybe the IT teams will own and develop. On the end of the spectrum, you've got tools like Power BI, which are very much, you know, end user. You go and tell us what it means with this, you know, analytical tool.
And Python's the glue, right? Or is it? Python is the glue.
I think so. You can get so far with SQL, but typically data's not in as good a format, or you know, you might have text files or Excel files or, you know, pieces of paper people have written in, and yeah, you need that glue or to be able to mash everything together to get that understanding and insight.
But so Carlton's going to do most of the questions today, so I'll just get one in there and then let you two go. I was just going to say, I recall from learning accounting, not at a CPA level, is very similar to programming. And then when you first learn it, it seems very binary. And then as you progress, I think specifically of like managerial accounting, it's just wildly subjective in the same way that programming, there are some things that are sort of black and white, but it's way more subjective than it seems on the surface. So it seems like a pretty natural overlap, actually, if you have a brain or training in one or the other, that they would apply.
I think there's a different spectrum. You can get real technical accountants, and you know, tax is a good example of this, where it's very rules-based. On the other end of the spectrum, I work for a strategy team. what's going to happen in the future, where's the business going, what does the world look like in 5 years? And that's very much, you know, blue sky thinking.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be fancy graphics with no real numbers on and stuff like that, you know, just up and to the right.
Yeah.
I'm teasing.
lots of PowerPoint.
Okay. So we kind of jumped right in because it's really interesting because from inside the Python world, it really looks as if Python's gaining massive ground share out, you know, in the quote unquote real world, right? So you're an accountant, and are you using Python at work really, or is it still VBA? And
it's still VBA. I think there's still some reluctance to be able to, you know, working in financial services, you know, rules and regulations. It's not something that, you know, teams are, you know, here, have this thing and go do with it what you want, but we don't really know it and we can't really control it. Is a big risk for an organization. So I think, if kind of touching what we said on earlier, if it's an Excel, that's a much more controlled and structured environment for, you know, end user computing be able to really use the power that Python has, really.
Okay. And so what is your path into Python then?
So I guess I've always had an interest in computing and websites. Helped run a website maybe early 2000s, back when it was, here's an FTP server, upload some files and...
Arsing can a can of beer.
And then it goes wrong and that's the end of that. So I did a bit of that, and more recently of what else can I do? What do I have some interest in? Can I pick up a hobby? And I started to build a website. My wife was helping with a charity for a while, so I built them a single page application and used Bootstrap for the styling of that. At the same time, trying to think about Python and trying to learn that for potential benefits at work. And I guess at that point, the two kind of meet, right? So you've got web and you've got Python, and there's Django.
Right, okay, fine.
And then the step for me was seeing Colton's talk from maybe 3 or 4 years ago. One of your, you know, Django needs contributors talks. And at the end of that, you said, by the way, crispy forms.
Yeah.
Could do with some help. And yeah, here's the thing. It's Bootstrap, which I know, and Python, which I'd like to know. But actually, crispy forms is mostly Bootstrap, really. There's Python, but that's not where
it's mostly the templates.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. It's a template issue. It's always a template issue. So there was a neat fit for me to start taking little steps towards using Python in a real world. As you're a beginner and you can do some courses and some training, and you can learn about all the various functions and classes and all of that. But how do you take that first step of, here's a real project that you can work on?
Yeah.
And crispy forms is where I ended up.
Yeah, and you've been an absolute, you know, stalwart there. I mean, you've just come in and now you're the lead maintainer, and you've added template packs for Bootstrap 5, which is just about ready, and for Tailwind as well. There's a pack there. I mean, do you want to talk about those a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So Bootstrap 4, we got to a fairly good state maybe 2 or 3 years ago, standing on the shoulders of giants, really, of who came before. And then looking what else there is, you know, Tailwind, here's this new thing that everybody's using. Okay, we can build a template pack for that. That would be an interesting project to work on. And what's really interesting about Tailwind is it's so different to Bootstrap, I guess. Bootstrap, you've got certain classes, certain styles, you use the right name and you get your form.
Yeah.
With Tailwind, it's much more choose your own adventure, and there's far more flexibility. And therefore, how do you allow the users to have that flexibility within that environment where templates tend to be very structured, and trying to find a few different options, which I think we're getting there with. Here's an opinionated Tailwind layout, it'll get you going up to speed quite quickly. But if you want to go fully custom, there's some capability to do that in a slightly easier way than writing lots of classes into templates yourself.
Yeah, because I mean, the traditionally with Crispy Forms, the way you would take it beyond the built-in template packs is, well, you override the template and you create, and you basically end up creating your own template pack, which is like your custom in-house sub template pack. It's not a subclass, you've just overridden the individual ones. But you know, there's 30 odd templates in the template pack, right? You don't necessarily want to override them all, but you just, I guess you do one at a time. I don't know.
And then Bootstrap 5 is kind of the evolution to Bootstrap 4, and just keeping it modern and current. And I think that's the big challenge for a lot of packages, isn't it? It's how do you have that sustainability to keep up to date with the latest changes, being it in Django or Python, or you know, we're using CSS frameworks. And they'll come along and they'll evolve, and you've always got to keep up to date to keep your package current.
Yeah, and I think at some point with Crispy Forms, we've got to start taking things out, because I think the new template packs are built as additional, as add-ons. They're separate packages, so that makes them easier to maintain. But in the core package, we've still got, I think, Bootstrap 2 template packs, which are probably time to say goodbye to those, and Bootstrap 3, probably time to say goodbye to those. Not necessarily delete them, but move them into a separate package, and then I don't know, what have you got thoughts in that direction?
I guess that's where my lack of knowledge comes, and actually where Carlton can provide is insight and guidance to me. Is anybody using Bootstrap 2?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question, isn't it? Anyone use answers still on the postcard, folks?
And I guess I don't know what changes are backwards compatible, or you know, are we making a decision that's too strong. I don't know. I can have my view, but I guess we don't know until we put it out there and somebody says, "Oh, I'm still using that."
Oh, you broke me! You broke me! We'll pin to the old version.
Yeah, we don't. I mean, that's a Django thing. We don't track really anything. So sometimes these questions we don't know. I mean, it's relevant because the Django survey is coming out this summer, which we just started doing in part to kind of get these questions. So I wonder if there's specifically on a package, how do you find out? I mean, we could put something in the Django newsletter, but Django itself doesn't really, you know, doesn't track and doesn't have an easy way to do a quick survey, other than, yeah, you don't want to, you know, change it and then people raise their hand afterwards.
I think for Crispy Forms, I think we could take the Bootstrap 2, but the inbuilt packet template packs, and we could say these are now all external from this version, because I think that the people coming forward, they're using the external packages already. So those are on an old version. They can either stay where they are, or if they're going to upgrade, they can just add an extra dependency and maybe change a line in the settings file. And if there's a wee breakage, well, sorry, but this isn't a big package. It's maintained by David. I'm still helping out from where I can, and there's one or two other people who, you know, pop in from time to time. There's not capacity there to maintain some sort of API stability policy of the likes of Django's. You know, we've got a Crispy Forms long term. No, we haven't got a Crispy Forms long term support. If you want to use it, you can either pin to the old one, which was working, or you can update, and you might have to make a few changes. Sorry, we can't do more. And if you're a company that's relying on it, you can stump up some money and say, look, can we fund some time on it, which has never happened in the history of the project. So I don't think we need to be, you know, obviously we don't try and break. We try to do the right thing and give an easy update path, but we're not under any obligation to, you know, there's a nice line Hynek put on that open source is like, it could have been Brett Cannon. I don't know. Somebody put on on their blog that open source is like putting stuff on your lawn and saying, help yourself, right? There's no obligation beyond that.
You mean there's not thousands of developers watching all of the open source packages just ready to jump in every time there's an issue?
No, there's not. There's really not.
Well, Carlton, is there a case when you wouldn't pin it, when you'd just straight nuke it, just to the larger question that David was bringing up?
If it's really old, you could just say, look, this is no longer maintained. I mean, like, so, no, there was one recently. is it Django MPTT? I think that's now been, I think it's that. Matthias had to say, look, this is now unmaintained. And sorry if it's unmaintained and sorry if you're depending on it, but I can't do it anymore. And you should be updating to Django Tree Queries, which is the newer library, and it's maintained. And but he's Treebeard. Okay. Yeah. And he's just simply not in a position to. And he was like, he actually said, I don't know what to do. And I was like, look, you just have to declare it as bankrupt. You have to say, look, we can't do this. And if somebody needs it, if a company needs it, a company can fund the really small amount of developer time it would take to keep it on the rails. But no company comes forward with any money to sponsor it. So at that point, let it die.
Yeah, Carlton's a great sounding board for me on these things because he has many more years doing this stuff. And again, it's the same advice, and it just need to hear that, it's, do what you can, but if it really matters, someone will raise their hand or they won't.
Yeah, and it's not just somebody to do it, it's somebody else to be able to review and merge and do the maintenance of it as well, and issue a new release and all of that other work that goes along with maintaining a package. It's much more than just opening a PR with a one-line change that fits your needs, right?
Yeah, no, entirely.
Well, that's why new blood is so nice, because sometimes someone has to step away, or they just need a break, or they just need help. I mean, like a third-party package, like Crispy Forms. I mean, even the awesome Django repo, which I started, I was pretty much, that's not even used. That's just a resource, but it has a lot of stars. And I was just like getting overwhelmed, and Jeff Triplett stepped in, which is nice. So that's, that's sort of an equivalent to you coming in on Crispy Forms, which I believe Daniel and Audrey started it, right? Or they initially worked on it, right? Because we had him on to talk about that. And then you kind of took it over, which he didn't really realize. And, there's this recycling of energy in a way.
Yeah, I mean, there was Crispy Forms was maintained for years by Miguel Araujo, but he had to drop away. And so 1.8 came along, and it was about to be released, and Crispy Forms was about to break. And it was like, I'm depending on this. I'm using this in my real life. So, jumped in, and I got a release out for 1.8, and then this coder came along. Dimitri, his name is in real life, met him years later at JangoCon, but he was just Stranger 666, and he just made about 100 PRs to fix various issues and bring it up to date. And it's like, oh, thanks, really helping. I never knew who this guy was, and then he was like, hey, I'm so nice to meet you. That was really nice many years later. But so I was maintaining Crispy Forms for 2-4 years, and then I was finding I hadn't got time to maintain it. I was working on REST Framework, I was working on Django, I was working on other packages, and Crispy Forms was just, I just needed help. And so when I gave my, I think it must have been at DjangoCon Europe in 2019, the Feeding the Pony talk, I'm not sure
whether it was, I think that's right. That.
Yeah, because I think that's the one I think I called out for Crispy Forms. I was like, look, if you want to get involved, it's a great learning opportunity. It's a great way of getting involved in the community. It's, feeds back into the cycle, and I could do with a hand, and there David was.
And I think that's a good way for new people to get involved with the Django ecosystem, isn't it? Here's a package that's fairly small in its scope that you can understand what it's doing end to end, whereas Django, it's this great big thing, and where do you start? And there's so much of it that's connected, and to try and piece it all together, there's a challenge there. But a smaller package, I was able to learn about what the how forms work in Django in a little bit more detail and really understand that. And that was a great learning opportunity for me to have that narrow scope and not get completely sidetracked and able to see the wood through the trees somewhat.
Yeah. But you have been digging into Django, right? So
yeah, so looking into Django itself, probably about 6 to 9 months after getting involved with Crispy Forms, I started to look at the Django issue list. And again, you can go onto the website and you can filter by component, pick forms, obviously. And hang on, here's a few tickets that are in areas that I'm sort of familiar with. I know what a bound field is, and I know how it works, and I know what a widget is, and here's a problem that I can piece together and go away and solve, and started to make some PRs on Django itself eventually.
Can I, because I remember a few of these, right? And these were, like, you did an amazing detective job on some, because some of the issues are like, that, you know, Django's 15 years old, and some of them are like, what's the, just as I'm making, sort of half making it up and half remembering the issues that David worked on when I say this, but like, when I've got null defined on my model field, and then it's, you know, but I need, it's not required at the form level, and then, you know, what should be the correct rendering of the HTML? That issue could have been open for half a dozen years, simply because it takes a bit of effort to dig down to it. I mean, can you remember any particular issues?
Yeah, there was certainly one where we were using multi-widgets, and the field can have many widgets. So you've got multiple fields and multiple widgets, and what should be the required class if certain fields within that multi-field are required,
or partially. Yeah. But the point is, the point is, it's complex, right? And you, so you end up thinking like in terms of a truth table, and you end up, but you did a massive amount on several of these issues, a massive amount of sort of thinking it through and taking the time.
Absolutely. And I think some of my best work is actually in those tickets that came to the conclusion, we shouldn't do this, or be it for, it's too technically complex, it's not suited to Django, or
not worth it.
It's not worth it. Or actually the, I think of it, the ticket we're just talking about with this massive truth table, eventually we came to the conclusion was that the behavior that we've got today is right. But you've got to go through quite a significant piece of effort to come to that conclusion and understand the reasons why it's working like that.
So what would you say to, so say someone's listening to this as a prospective contributor, and what kind of conclusion would you draw about how to approach a ticket, or, you know, what's your take on that?
I think Django's big and complex and mature, and the quality of Django is very high. So there are no real, we've got this easy pickings flag, right? And there's hardly any tickets that are trivial, that's a 5-minute job. All of the tickets require some time and some dedication to take an issue and really understand what's going on here. So be prepared to put aside a reasonable amount of time to really understand the issue and be able to explain why it needs to happen in a certain way, or why your change needs to take place. Particularly for the older issues, I've fallen guilty of this, of, here's a ticket from 5 years ago. Does anybody know what the answer is? I've fell into that trap, and it's so easy to do. And the honest answer is nobody knows. And that's why you need to take a bit of time to understand it and understand what's going on. And I think it's a phrase that you've used a few times, Carlton, is as soon as you've picked up an old ticket for a little bit of time, you're the world expert in that ticket, because nobody knows is the answer.
I think it's interesting, too, that you're diving into, sorry to interrupt, Carlton, that looking at the issue tracker and seeing what you can pick up, as opposed to people who have, as Carlton did initially with 1.8, like, this is a real world problem I have and I need to solve it, or I did solve it and I want to apply it back to Django. I wonder, Carlton, anecdotally, what do you think the mix is of that, of people sort of taking the academic challenge as opposed to a real world fix?
I think we see a lot of tickets come in where it's like, I've got this bug, and it's clearly a bug in Django, and here's the 2-line change to Django that would make my use case work. And that's okay. But then it's like, okay, but is this really a bug, and have this got tests? And
yeah, it sort of throws the body over the wall to you to
and that's so a lot of the fellow work is triaging tickets, and it's like, well, that can't be that hard. No, it's really hard. You wake up on a Monday morning, you haven't quite had your coffee, and you sit there and you go, test client doesn't redirect correctly if X, and you're like, doesn't it? Okay. And then an hour later, you're like, I still have no idea what's going on. So triage is actually really hard. And but a lot of tickets are, I've hit this issue. And a lot of contributions are kind of one-time contributions on, I've hit this issue. And someone might make two or three of those over a couple of years. And then, you know, they might come along and make a few more contributions and whatnot. So it's not that they're one-time contributors, but that's a kind of one-off, you know, thing. And then the other approach is to look at the open tickets and take a bit of to pick, narrow it down by component. That's what David said. And then you've got to focus on one or two and really get a feel for them. And that's, like, other than fixing the issue, what's the payoff, David?
For me,
like, why would you do this?
Yeah, for me, it's that learning experience of, here's how a large project works, here's how it's structured and the programs run and tickets and what that process is, and tests are really important and why tests are really important and how to write really great documentation is what I take from it. And I just want to pause on documentation for a second now I've said the word.
Go on then.
Yeah, so documentation, that is one thing that I've taken from my experience of Django back to the real world in my job. And that's the way that Django structures its documentation. And there's a theory called diataxis. And it explains that documentation is a variety of things, from some things that will be useful whilst you're doing the job versus studying. So on one extreme, you might have classic procedure notes. Here's a process, you click on this button and then you click on this. That's great whilst you're doing your work, but doesn't allow you to understand the how or the what. You might need some reference documentation of what do all the fields mean, or how does this whole system fit together. And to create a sustainable process, you need that knowledge to be able to understand the bigger picture, not just do your process that you've got today, because you'll never be able to change and innovate. And, you know, what happens if something new comes along? I don't know, I just do it this way. And you need that reference material to be able to understand what's going on. I think that's really valuable to organisations to think about documentation in a much more holistic manner than just process notes.
Yeah, so I mean, the diataxis framework there is by Daniele Prothida, who was part of the Django team and who really helped put the Django docs together into that structure. And it's got like the tutorials, the guides, the how-tos and the reference, right? And I like that you take that back to work, and if you can wield it into the office and say, we need these kind of docs.
Yeah, and they're not technical documentation. It's much more focused on the end user, but the theory can still apply. And it's not something that I've really thought about until I've been working with Django. I guess you get taught a certain way, and this is how we do things around here, and you do need that wider experience of what's going on in the wider world and what's relevant and what can I apply to my own situation.
Yeah, and so you've been massively active doing reviews and on other people's PRs as well, and particularly Docs Change. I remember the Season of Docs project, you were active on the PR there to help, you know, improve the contributing guide.
Yeah, I think that's somewhere where I can add some value, isn't it? I'm never going to be able to go and solve a ORM ticket, but if there's a ORM ticket and it's got docs changes, actually I can read that and spot typos and, oh, that bit doesn't read quite right. And it's another step to getting that PR merged and keeping the quality high. It's so hard to review your own work. It's just...
No, it's impossible.
Is it just impossible, isn't it?
Yeah.
And nothing like coding shines a massive light on that.
So one thing I do have to say here is that as part of the DepTem changes and the change to Django's governance and the change to Django core, we've created a triage and review team, which are for regular participants on the GitHub repo. They get a few extra permissions on GitHub, like to help manage the tickets, get Cubs Got This triage role. But hopefully we can help give people a bit of recognition for some of the effort that they put in. And David was invited onto the triage and review team for his work.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Not contributing at all to running a third-party package, to contributing to Django itself, to being on the triage and review team. In a few years' time, you'll be on the technical board, David.
And I think that's part of, if I can do it, I'm not a professional in this area. A bit of time and attention and, the future's your roster, really. I guess what might be interesting is, if I was a lot younger.
That would be interesting for all of us, I think.
Is that a way that, younger folk can, get into coding and, make that a professional career? For me and my personal circumstances, it'd be useful to apply it to my own job, but it would be too much of a jump for my career to kind of jump into that as a full-time role.
I think if you're a junior, it's a really good way of building up a few points on the profile or on the CV that can make the difference in a hiring conversation. Why should we give you it? How can you demonstrate you these abilities? Well, do you know what? I'm a regular contributor to this smaller package in the Django ecosystem, and I've got one or two PRs on Django itself. And if you can say that,
You're top of the queue automatically.
Yeah,
because as we've talked about, there's selfish reasons to contribute to open source. And if you're able to do all those things, you've proven your technical ability, you've proven your ability to communicate, you've demonstrated interest. It's just a absolute top of the queue. And as you said, David, it's there to be done. So one of the, Carlton does these talks trying to say to people, hey, like, what's the next step for folks? It's like, find a way to contribute. I wanted to ask you, David, about, you mentioned that leap to looking at these issues where there aren't these easy pickings. I sometimes think, well, maybe, docs should be the easy pickings because that feels kind of like an easy pickings. But that leap that you made, I think a lot of people don't. And that's something Carlton's been working a lot on, trying to have a path. Like, is there a way to have to do a PR that doesn't count, but kind of gets you in the process? Like, how do we open it up so it doesn't require this extra level of commitment that you've, done, and now you're on the other side of it?
I think that's just picking up your point about easy documentation tickets. I think that sounds easy, but...
Well, yeah.
I'm explaining myself very well. So I think some of the documentation issues, it might be, I fell into this trap recently, but let's talk about it. CRSF documentation needs a bit of review. It's a documentation ticket, but actually it's a security issue. Rightly or wrongly, I flagged that as a easy pickings recently. And the reason I did that was actually there's a patch already there that's been written by somebody who's probably fairly knowledgeable, had a couple of reviews, but has then got stalled. So I was thinking, maybe that's easier because it's partway there. It just needs that last little polish to get it over the line. You're not starting from rewrite the whole documentation.
You almost need like a hype man or woman to sort of tee it up and say, hey, this is actually relatively an easy picking, but that requires extra work as opposed to just doing it yourself. I mean, because they have the sprints at DjangoCons. That's as good as we're at, right, Carlton, in terms of getting new people into contributing?
So, I think that the sprints are the best we have at the moment, is that, at least then you've got a group of people together, and we have, pre-pandemic, you have a group of people together. We had a great workshop at DjangoCon US 2019, where we did a contributing to Django workshop. We had like four tables of people, and everyone was helping each other and all going through the getting started and getting set up with the unit tests and then that great difficulty of finding the ticket, of browsing. But that we can make that better. We can make that flow better. But sprints is a good opportunity to get started, I think.
I often think too, like, how could that be extended to regular Django meetups? So here in Boston, there has been, and hopefully will be again, a monthly meetup. And all the time I meet people who use Django professionally, who solve some bug, and they say, I'm like, that's great. Would you submit a PR to Django? And they're, well, I don't know how to do that. So there, if there was, I don't know, every quarter or something, some sort of way to do that, that would help. But
I guess that's my question, maybe to both of you. Why do you think, what stops people contributing more? Is it, I don't know how to do it? Or part of me wonders if it's a bit like a bus driver's holiday, you know, I contribute because it's not my day job. It's something different. It's like, you know, doing Sudoku or what have you. And you know, you hear a lot of people going doing woodworking. That's something that's not their day job. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think there's something in that. Like, I've been on the computer all day. Why would I spend all evening on the computer too? That's insane. Do something else.
I think if you don't have the community aspect, it's a lot harder. I think once you kind of get into the community in some way, then it becomes a lot easier. But yeah, I mean, I look at a computer all day. It is the last thing I want to do in my spare time. Though to your point, though, in terms of like, Carlton asked you, why do you contribute? I loved your answer about, you know, learning, because I think that's kind of like the highest goal that's self-sustaining around why do anything. I mean, for me, being on the board, doing this podcast, all these things, the biggest takeaway is it's interesting and I learn. And so that's self-sustaining in a way that something more transactional wouldn't be. So I love that answer that you gave.
Yeah, I think the interest thing is important. You know, I'm an accountant, but I don't go out finding people's tax returns to do in the evening. Because it's not interesting to me.
I think coding, especially people are like, why do you code? It's like, I code because it's like literally crafting reality out of pure thought at its best. You know, sometimes, yeah, oh God, I've got to type out these fields of this form again. Like, surely I shouldn't have to do this. But there's mundane bits in everything. But when you're really structuring the software, it's like, yeah, this is just pure
creation, like magic in a way. Yeah.
And that's what program is about at its best. And so, like, yeah, that's why I think people do it. I don't know. I want to ask you, David, about how you find time for it. Because you've got a full-time job, right? You've got kids.
Yeah, full-time job, two kids, right. Which is just, yeah, a bigger job than the job. So it's just time when you've got little pockets of time here and there, you know. Can't just say, oh, I'm going to spend the day looking at the computer. That just doesn't happen. But, you know, and half an hour here and an hour there in the evenings. And those little bits of time add up if you do it regularly. I find it a little bit like exercise. I've been trying to get into running a little bit this year, and couch to 5K, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, a few times a week. And then suddenly after a few months, you're running 5K and you can't believe you got there. And it wasn't that it was a massive time commitment. It was just a little bit irregular, and that really makes the difference. And I guess it's the same for the contributions that I've made over, I guess we're coming up to a few years now, a couple of years, probably Q3 2019, I started contributing. And over that length of time, it starts to build up to something substantial that you can start to point at. But to just sit there and do all of that work in a day, a week, a month, isn't sustainable.
No, it wouldn't. Yeah, wouldn't happen.
I like how you said pockets of time, because I think I sometimes get in the trap of thinking, if I don't have 2 to 3 hours uninterrupted, which I haven't for a year, I can't do anything. When, you know, if you do find these moments, it does, you know, it is percolating in your brain. And in some ways, it's an excuse for me anyways, around stuff. But any amount of time does add up on an issue.
I've started to find myself recently, I don't know if this is helpful or not, probably get Carlton's view, is almost half commenting. So a patch might be a reasonable change, but actually, if I just review a little bit, and I talked about the docs earlier, but maybe it's a test or a bit of a code, and just making a few comments here and there is another step forward. You don't have to review the whole thing. It could be iterative.
Yeah, no, I mean, small, like, I always made the joke, like, some people play Pokemon Go, I play GitHub. It's like, you know, to answer, you know, especially when I was starting on REST framework, it would be, you know, how do I get this serialized? Oh, I can tell you how to do that. That's a, you know, and that it was just a little bit. Instead of playing Candy Crush on the loo, I could answer, was, you know, GitHub issue.
Just do PRs on the loo, right?
Well, no, unfortunately, I still haven't got the editor on the phone to do the autocomplete. And, I can never remember the method names otherwise.
So a good example of this is there's a PR open for DRF to move the website, the API.
The browsable API.
There we go. To Bootstrap 5. It's currently on Bootstrap 3. That's a piece of work that I've completed over the last year or so. And there's still work to be done on it, but a few templates here and there over a period of time, and you start to get there, which something's starting to take its end shape and is heading towards being ready for review.
And I mean, yeah, we've milestoned that for the next sort of DRF feature release to get fully reviewed, and that'd be an amazing contribution. But see, this is the thing, David, it does add up. See, I can think you've been on Crispy Forms maintaining that. DRF, you've definitely contributed to. I think I've seen you on channels as well, and Django Filter, and, you know, various things about the jazz. You're everywhere. Like, are you building a secret super app using all these packages?
I think that's probably the bit that amuses me the most is I don't really know how Django works.
Well, now you know you're an expert when you can say that and mean it, but everyone looks to you for the answer. That's like the highest level, I think. You're there.
Made small contributions here and there, but it's not like I've sat down there and, you know, built a functioning web app. So, you know, I'm not an expert in ORM and databases, but there's small changes that you can make to a number of packages. Django comes along and deprecates a feature. That change will then need to be made to packages across the whole ecosystem. So, for example, a year or two ago, we deprecated the URL function, moved to path and repath, and there's dozens of packages that are still using the old function. It just needs somebody to go and make that relatively small PR to keep that package up to date. And when it's quite bound in terms of its scope and the warnings and documentation for Django are quite clear what the change is, that's something that I can add value to. It's not a massive task. It just takes a little bit of time. And I feel I can add some value there.
Yeah, and some, yeah. So there's one more thing I really wanted to talk to you about was your work on Django Bench, which is the benchmarking framework. You've got this, you've been doing some super things there, creating benchmarks left, right, and center, and you've got some interactive dashboard that was showing regressions in, you know, this particular commit. What's going on there? What's your work on that?
Yeah, maybe my approach is a little bit scattered, a bit here and a bit there, and maybe not completing anything, but the Django bench is really interesting. So there's an existing Django bench repository that's part of the Django organization, and you can run that and it will tell you whether there's a regression in a certain commit against a set of benchmarks that already exist. That's great, but you have to work quite hard to understand where the commits are and where the regressions fall. So I looked at the problem in a couple of ways. The first one was, how can we automate this? So step one was to get it running in a GitHub action and save it into a SQLite database. That worked quite well for a little while until the database got so big that it stopped working. We hit the size limit eventually. And actually what that exercise proved is there's a lot of noise when trying to run benchmarks in a CI system. They go up and down all over the place and every other commit is marked as a regression. So I looked at what else I could do, and Victor Steiner,
core committer, Python core.
He's got a series of blog posts on benchmarking Python. We'll get a link for those in the show notes. And he's got, I think he built PyPerf. I think I'm right in saying that. which is a little tool to write some benchmarks and run them much more reliably with CPU isolation as well. So I started to have a look at that and actually made some progress on that. And along that expedition, I came along a package called ASV, which is Airspeed Velocity.
Yeah,
and there's a few packages which use this to benchmark their projects. And it's a fantastic tool. You can point it at your repository and write some benchmarks, and you can run those set of tests to see regressions over time. And at the back of it, it automatically generates a website that tracks the performance of those tests over time. And then you can zoom in and there's a big support up here. What's going on there? And
yeah,
you click on it and then it takes you to the commit on GitHub that caused that regression.
Yeah, that's kind of cool, hey?
It's fantastic. So we've built that. We've migrated most of the existing Django benchmarks over to that. And it did highlight a few regressions that were able to catch and fix. And there's probably caught a couple that are much more harder to. But the point is we know it's there. I think what is next for that package is what should a Django benchmark be and what do we need to make fast? So I could write a benchmark for, I think there's a function in the utilities that takes a word and translates it into a telephone number. You know, I could write a benchmark for that, but that's not really going to make Django faster. Which are the functions that get called the most times and how do we get the most bang for the buck? Because there's things we can do to make Django faster, but might make the code more unreadable and less maintainable. And where are you willing to make those judgments versus not? Yeah. And
if it's inside the core request response handler, then
exactly. And do we have good benchmarks for each bit of that? I'm not so sure. And that's my lack of knowledge of not having an understanding of how Django works.
Yeah,
I was just going to say that would be a good talk. Sorry, Carl. If you're inclined to give a DjangoCon talk, which you should if you're open to it, just what you've said would be an amazing 20-minute talk.
I will. You're not the first person to have said that to me.
we'll just chip away at it. We'll just chip away at it.
Yeah, come on. We'll get you up on the stage. So do you need because like it's there, but do we need to be hosting the Django bench somewhere? Do we need to be because you set it up on Heroku or something on your own account? Do we need to be stepping in there and
it wasn't that provisioning in advance? I was running it on my Raspberry Pi.
Right, brilliant. That's the sub theme of this podcast, is that Raspberry Pis are great.
I do all of my development work on my Raspberry Pi.
There you are.
Yeah, you don't need a fancy whatever it is device. It's Raspberry Pis work great.
That's a pretty deep statement, though. That's like saying Jimi Hendrix could make any guitar play well. I mean, it's true, but yeah. I like the statement, but I'm still struggling with Windows. Like, I've dived more into Windows recently, and I'm just like really frustrating. So, but I suppose once you go pure Linux, it's you're there. It doesn't change around as much as Mac or Windows would. So,
yeah, I think sorry, jumping out a little bit, but just on the Raspberry Pi thing, I think that's part of the journey of being a beginner. It's right, so you want to learn Django, but you need to learn pip and virtlenv and what sort of this other stuff and Git and how do I fix my Git history that I've completely broken? And there's so many problems that beginners can face, and just that can take a long time to overcome.
I think that's my next talk, by the way. Like, I have sketched it out. Like, what just to say, like, here's the pathway that we all find our way through one way or another, but to just say, this is what it takes to do a simple Django site, and there's quite a lot of things. And that's actually the larger goal of, I have this Learn Django site, which I'm is a long, long-term project for me of trying to have some sort of syllabus and hold someone's hand through that instead of Googling around, where it can feel like endless deep holes of Git and then SQL and then, you know, JavaScript. And but just to say, like, you know, here's the path, broadly speaking, I think that would add value. Also to, you know, someone approach, you know, if you're a Django developer, someone will come to you and say, how do I learn Django? And you don't always have a good answer because you haven't thought about it as a beginner and things have changed. So anyways, that chips away at me doing that, doing that talk.
Right, so there you are. We've got a talk for each of you lined up. I'm just going to end the podcast quickly before you come up with one for me as well.
So just jumping back to ASV, I think the bits that take that project forward are looking at those benchmarks and do we have the right coverage of the core pieces of Django? Are we covering that, and are there any regressions that we've missed in years gone by? And then also, how do we make that project sustainable? I can run it on my Raspberry Pi at home and that's okay, but
we could equally, we've got servers available, we could run it on one of those. And it just, I think an email to Django developers would, you know, there's been a lot of interest in your PR there on Django Bench, and an email to Django developers saying, hey, these are the to-dos here, I think that would be a great discussion to have.
Yeah, I think we've tried it in CI, like I said, and that was noisy, but it needs some, like you say, a server that doesn't have any noise on it to get those reliable benchmarks to have those run regularly. And then you could have it run with each PR, or, you know, here's a PR that we're, you know, a little bit concerned about. Does it impact performance? And ask the automation system to benchmark that specific PR for you.
Yeah. I mean, we could certainly run it on the main branch daily, and then for specific commits or PRs would be, you know, I mean, the issue, we could run it on every commit to every PR, but that's a lot of trees. So we try, you know, these heavy things, we try to limit the number of CI runs. We have such a big matrix. So yeah, but to do it on main once a day is not a problem.
Seems like a nice feature for button.dev for your own deployments, Carlton.
No, that's not quite in the ballpark, but, you know, we'll see. We'll see. Anyway, right. So, David, brilliant. Thank you. I think we're at time. Is there anything else you wanted to flag out or talk about while you were here?
I think we've covered everything that I was thinking of. I just want to say, you know, thank you to you both for having me on. Yeah, it's been a great chat. Actually, I've got one question for Carlton. We kind of touched on it a little bit earlier. Is how do you as fellows manage the uncertainty that comes with that role? So, you know, I wake up in the morning and I know broadly what's going to happen this week, next week. But with a fellow role, it's, you know, wake up and, you know, how do you know where to start?
Well, yeah, it's a good question. It's like a fire hose. It's beautifully unending. So to that extent, it is predictable. Every day you'll wake up, you'll go to the dashboard, there'll be three unreviewed tickets, there'll be a release blocker, and there'll be an email to security at djangoproject.com with, you know, something going on that's like and you just sort of have to breathe in, take it slowly, and you can't, it's unending. There is no get it done, there is no, you know, it's how are we going at the moment? Yeah, we're doing okay at the moment. Oh, the review queue's up a bit more at the moment. Okay, so we need to try and prioritize that. But there's these release blockers and, you know, they take priority. Oh, there's a security release, that takes priority. Oh, there's, you know, the Jenkins servers needs rebuilding because something or other. That, so this, it's, you just take it on.
But not only that, it's in public, right? You know, if when I do something at work, you have a chat with your manager and, you know, that's between you and them. In this role that you have, you know, anybody in the world can come along and comment anything on anything. And that's just incredible that you managed to manage that.
People are generally nice, and that's good. And Maris and I work hard to support each other when people aren't nice. And we're very conscious of what the other one is doing. And if we need help, we reach out to each other to ask for it. Generally speaking, the fact that it's in public is totally fine. And it's very rare that we have what I would call trolling. Sometimes we get someone who's a little bit cross. Sometimes there are, because, you know, it's a multi-language community, sometimes there's a slight lack of communication, that a tone isn't quite understood, or and that can be a lack of fluency or whatever. It's like, and it's very good at, you know, monitoring itself. The community is fantastic, and fortunately with Django's old and mature enough and unexciting enough not to draw the worst elements of the tech community towards it. That's a big thing. You know, if you're in the exciting new hotness, you get a lot more flack than we get in Django. But but Django's worked long and hard to build a community and an environment like that. So, you know, how much is chicken and how much is egg? It's hard to say.
Yeah, I would echo that. It's a very nice community, and it's a very small community. So on occasions when there's a bad actor, or there's a chance to confirm, you know, am I taking this the wrong way, or is it really just someone like that? But it sorts itself out quite well in practice, even at the organizational level, because there's still some of that, and it's very rare. And when it happens, it's handled pretty well, I think. But I love your question about how do you bite off an elephant? Because Carlton is very zen about this. I have the same thing. I get overwhelmed with all the things to do as opposed to discrete tasks.
You just need to have more children. You just need to have more children. That's the solution.
So the answer to seeking control is just totally give up on control.
Yeah. There is no spoon.
David, you're on Twitter. Is that the best way? Or I guess on the Django track, if anyone wants to reach out or help with something, what's the best way for someone to do that?
Yeah, I guess Twitter, SmithDC1.
Okay,
yeah. I better check that now.
It's, yeah, David_Smith86, right?
Yeah, no, SmithDC1 is on GitHub. That's GitHub,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, David, it's very nice to meet you. You know, that's Django is such a large community that... I'd seen some of your PRs, but I'd never had a chance to meet you. So it's been very nice to hear your story.
That's fab, and thank you for having me on.
Thanks for coming on, and thanks for all your contributions to the, you know, Django itself and the wider ecosystem, and of course Crispy Forms, which you're stalwart for.
Thank you very much.
Okay, well that's it, folks. Thanks for joining us. This is Django Chat with Chat Django on Twitter. Join us next time.
Bye.